Third case of the day, Purcell versus the United States. Okay. Mr. Hedemer?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. This is a wrongful death case arising under the Federal Tort Claims Act. The district court ruled that the claim was barred by the Paris Doctrine. The district court was incorrect because this case does not fall under the Paris Doctrine. The reasoning behind every case, every single case affirming Perez, in every case cited by the United States, follows one of three factual circumstances. First, there's cases where the plaintiff alleges some negligent supervision or negligence on the part of his superior officers. Second, there's cases where the plaintiff was injured in the course of receiving some special benefit. And what I mean by special benefit is in like free medical care in the VA hospitals, those sort of cases.
Is there any benefit from having on-base housing?
On-base housing, yes, there's a benefit. But we are not alleging any negligence in on-base housing. We're alleging negligence in the law enforcement, such as in the Ferris case itself. That's a case involving the on-base housing because the housing burned down. This case alleges negligence in the law enforcement that responded. I'll explain more later about how the negligence that we're alleging is completely analogous to the standard that we'd hold regular local law enforcement to. Under the Chicago police responding to an incident, it'd be the same standard. So there's no special benefit received by that type of law enforcement because it's analogous to civilian law enforcement.
Well, there were military police involved in this case, right?
Yes.
And
who
is there a special benefit to being protected by military police similar to what you were speaking of in municipal police? I understand you are not suggesting that that was extended here, but I'm just talking about sort of the umbrella concept.
Certainly. The idea is that with the standard that the military police is held to in this case is the same standard that local any other police would be held to. So there's nothing special about it. There's no greater benefit received by a member of the military to be protected by military police versus being protected by military police. There's no added benefit to that. And then the third type of cases are those that where someone's actually participating in a military mission, and that fits the actual statute of the FTCA. The district court erred because this case does not fit any of those three circumstances. If this court were to affirm the district court, they would actually be expanding the Ferris Doctrine to a broader panel of cases. The true test to be applied, and the true test that's been applied in other cases affirming Ferris, is whether or not it's parallel to civilian life. In this case, everything that plaintiff's decedent, Christopher Purcell, was doing before he died was perfectly parallel to civilian life. He's sitting alone in his apartment, drinking alcohol, playing on the internet. There's nothing about this has anything to do with the military. He loads his own personal weapon that he bought by himself, a .357 Ruger Magnum. Becomes increasingly more depressed. He goes on MySpace, a public site, and he says on MySpace, I'm going to kill myself. Fortunately, someone in his family learns of this, and they call the base. Calling the base is just the same as if, imagine their son had lived across the street in Brunswick. Then his dad would have called the Brunswick City Police. Instead, his dad knows that he's in a military base, so he calls base security. Security responds. Their response is the same as any kind of response that a normal law enforcement officer would do. There's nothing about this regarding his rank. There's nothing alleging his rank. It's just regular police officers. They come in. They're employed by both the Navy and the Department of Defense. They handcuff him after some struggle, as explained in the brief. It's not terribly relevant here. But they handcuff him, and then they negligently remove one handcuff. And because of that act of negligence, which has nothing to do with their military relationship, of removing a handcuff of a suicidal individual, he pulls a gun from his chest that they failed to search, and he shoots himself. And nothing there has anything to do with the military relationship. The response of law enforcement had nothing to do with the chain of command. The same law enforcement officers, the military police, the Department of Defense people, they could have been arresting an admiral at the time. They could have been arresting the hospitalman, Christopher Purcell. Nothing to do with the chain of command. Nothing questioning the chain of command in this suit. It was just simple negligence of they see an empty gun case. They see bullets missing. They know that he's threatened suicide. All these things creates a duty for them to search him. And they breach that duty. That simple. This case is distinguishable from every case affirming Perez. And it's analogous to there's only a handful, I admit, but it's analogous to the handful of other circuit-level decisions that State for Ferris doesn't apply. In this case, there's not a single claim of negligent supervision. Because a lot of cases, especially suicide cases and cases used by this court, are alleging some kind of a special relationship regarding the supervision. You know, they should have known that this guy in their base was suicidal. They should have done some screening for him. They should have taken his weapon away. Not because they were law enforcement, but because they were superior officers. And this court said the last time it addressed the Ferris Doctrine that the relationship between the alleged tortfeasor and the victim is critical. And in this case, the relationship is just local cops and a suicidal individual. It's not a hospital man and an officer. It's not a DOT security officer and a hospital man. It's just police and a suicidal individual. The United States cites to a lot of cases that go contrary to what I'm saying right now. Because they cite Smith versus the United States, which was here in the Seventh Circuit. In that case, alleged negligent intentional act by a drill sergeant in sexually assaulting an inferior officer. And that case is very unique because it requires the military relationship. It requires a severe support relationship for that case to work at all. Another one is Skies, which is another suicide case. In that case, there's allegations of almost a special duty, a higher duty, by a superior officer to know that his inferior officer is suicidal and to go and affirmatively take the weapon away from him. There's nothing in civilian life like that.
Another case. This doctrine, as you well know, and I'm sure the government is a challenging one.
Yes.
And it's had over a half century history, and sometimes it's hard to track it, and your research, I'm sure, indicates that. Let me ask you this. If the decedent here had attempted suicide, he certainly attempted an unfortunate success. And he could have been prosecuted, couldn't he? He could have been court-martialed for that attempt, couldn't he?
I don't know. You were a JAG officer, right?
So. Well, I'm just raising it.
Okay.
I believe so. And I'm trying to get the focus of an active duty individual. And, you know, press reports, I don't want to go outside the record, indicate an increasing number, especially in light of our recent conflicts of suicide. In fact, one of the branches, I think, is spending time examining that question. Now maybe all the branches are because of the uptick. And so this issue is kind of live issue as far as what potential is. In this case, we might have the potential that suicide was connected to his service.
Right. Well, it's a very live issue. It's a very pertinent issue. And the Ferris Doctrine is very unfortunate. And to quote Scalia, it wholeheartedly deserves all the criticism it's received. And what I've just given you is an opportunity to let this case go without. I gave you room to get around the Ferris Doctrine.
You think there's running room here?
There's room. I made room. And I just hopefully let me stay in that room.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator. I know you reserved some time. Mr. Miller?
May it please the court and counsel. At the time of his suicide, Christopher Purcell was a Navy hospital corpsman. He was living on a military base in Navy barracks, and he was on active duty. All of the individuals who responded to the situation that night were Navy and Department of Defense personnel. All of the conduct being challenged in this lawsuit was taken by Navy or Department of Defense personnel during their interaction with another service member, and that was Mr. Purcell. In addition, all of the challenged conduct was subject to Navy regulations and standard operating procedures, and ultimately resulted in discipline against military personnel in a military proceeding. In short, this case is barred by the Ferris Doctrine because virtually all of the activity out of which the injury arose was military activity. Counsel has argued that this case is analogous to somebody just calling the local police in this type of situation. But that's just not right. Calling a military base and having Department of Defense and Navy personnel show up is something different. and that's because they are military personnel. And the reasons...
Well, it's different only just because that's a sort of separate part of our society. But the quality of response, Mr. Miller, there's no difference factually, is there? I mean, you're just saying it's part of the military family and
I think the separate part... The separate part of our society is the relevant point. The military is separate, and it's military personnel involved on both sides of the activity in this case. And that's what makes a fundamental difference. That's what the Ferries Doctrine is all about, that the military is in a better position to respond to and deal with these sorts of circumstances and handle the discipline in these sorts of circumstances, and that civilian courts are less well-equipped to do that. In order for the Ferries Doctrine to apply, there is no requirement that the service member be performing a military mission at the time of the occurrence. In the Selby case decided by this court, the Ferries Doctrine was applied to a medical malpractice claim that had nothing to do with the military mission. In the Smith case decided by this court, the Ferries Doctrine was applied to a sexual assault claim that had nothing to do with the military mission. There's also no requirement in order for the Ferries Doctrine to apply, that the injury have no parallel in civilian life, as is shown by the Selby and Smith cases that I just mentioned. There are medical malpractice and sexual assault claims in civilian life. Nevertheless, the Ferries Doctrine still barred the claims in Selby and Smith because the injuries in those cases arose out of activities incident to military service, and that's the same case here. Counsel argued today that this type of case will not involve the judiciary in military supervision and management. And he suggested in his brief that it won't get involved in those issues because there's no question about the validity of military rules or question of punishment of military officials. That's not correct. That's not the only way in which the district court can become involved in military supervision and management. For example, in this case, if the district court were to make a determination about what Navy and Department of Defense personnel should have done or should not have done that night, then it becomes enmeshed in military supervision and management. Likewise, if the district court were to evaluate the Navy regulation violations that are alleged in the complaint, it would first have to determine what those regulations mean. It would then have to decide whether or not they were complied with. And both of those tasks would certainly involve the district court in military supervision and management. Near the end of his brief, in the reply brief, the personal representative in this case argues that the Supreme Court's original decision in Ferries is contrary to congressional intent in the Federal Tort Claims Act. I want to address that because that sort of frontal assault on the Ferries Doctrine can only be considered by the Supreme Court at this point. Nevertheless, the inclusion of that argument by the personal representative in this case does have, I think, at least one implication for the current appeal, which is this. It appears to be an implicit acknowledgement that this case cannot go forward unless and until the Supreme Court overrules the Ferries Doctrine. If there are no further questions at this point, we would ask that the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Hatterman?
Your Honors, first, regarding my portion of the brief talking about how Ferris is wrongly decided and things such as that, this court has to follow precedent, but it doesn't have to expand on it. And I want to make it very clear to this court that this is not something that should be expanded on. This is originally wrongly decided in the first place, and we're stuck with it. But we don't have to build on it. And I want to make that very clear, that this is not something that should be expanded. It should be handled very delicately, as you know, because this is a great deprivation of rights. What could happen is I've heard, familiar line from the United States Attorney's Office is that the Ferries Doctrine applies to everything involving the military. It's widespread, and what that means is that when you sign up for the military, you're relinquishing an incredible amount of rights, and that is not at all what the original congressional intent said. And if the Supreme Court ever got to hear a good case on this again, it's been since 1987, they would try to winnow this down too. So I just want to make
it. Had
they've had a fair number of chances over the years since 87. I think 87 is the last examination, so we're approaching a quarter of a century, and they don't seem to take up any of these circuit cases.
No. A couple of things I wanted to point out regarding the unique benefit I discussed. A lot of cases that would appear to be harmful to my point are recreation-type cases. Because you say, you know, somebody's injured when they rent a boat. They're injured when they borrow a plane. And the relationship to the military is very tenuous at that point. But when in actuality, it's a special benefit provided by the military to its officers and enlisted men. And it's, I don't get to go fly it around a plane for free because I work somewhere. It's a special benefit.
Were the military police going to, I know you would disagree with maybe their approach, but were they going there to try to stop? Would you accept that they were going there to try to stop a suicide?
Apparently.
Okay.
Yes.
Would your position be any different than, let's say, you were critical of the medical care that he got if he was unsuccessful?
Medical care is interesting because they're receiving free medical care, free or extremely discounted. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know more about this than I do. But they're getting this benefit of free medical care. And in exchange for that benefit, that's a special, unique benefit, they're losing some rights. And that's the policy behind that is fair.
Well, no. I'm perhaps I didn't make it clear. Let's say we had this situation with a decedent where he was would have been unsuccessful but injured himself in some fashion, was taken to the base hospital and treated, but not treated well.
Then I'd lose.
Would that be any different than not the what you believe to be the inappropriate treatment by the military police?
That's entirely different because that's a special, unique benefit that he's receiving. Is the free medical care. That's a benefit that he's, you know, it's a give and take. The policy behind that makes sense, that it's a special benefit. I'm saying law enforcement is something that just comes at standard. That's my time. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Miller. The case is taken under advisement.